Are you an overwhelmed entrepreneur with endless tasks, emails, and messages? Do you feel your systems are ineffective or you don't have any at all? I get it. You wish you could come up for air and take that well-deserved vacation you've been dreaming of, all without sacrificing the growth or health of your business. If you are ready to make a change, join my Clockwork for Freedom program, which will introduce concepts that you can use to create operational efficiency and be able to step away without worry. Whether you join the book club to read on your own and get your questions answered as they arise, or my group program with online training, tools, and support, you can find the assistance you desire. To find out all the details, go to bit.ly/CFFRegSM. That's bit.ly/CFFRegSM. I can't wait to help you clockwork your business so you have the freedom you deserve. Today marks the 350th episode of my podcast, Biz Help for You. I can hardly believe it. Today, I want to look back at some of the guests and topics I've had on the show over the last 50 episodes. I hope you have enjoyed the information that has been shared and find new tips from today's episode. And would you please share my show with those you know so they can hear the tips? I so appreciate your support.
Welcome to Biz Help for You, the show that saves you the expensive learning curve by providing advice from industry experts in every facet of the entrepreneurial journey. Too many small businesses collapse. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, 20% fail within their first year, and less than 35% make it to their 10th anniversary. The goal of this podcast is to change that statistic. So if you're interested in learning more to be a successful entrepreneur, tune in today.
The first guest I want to highlight is Mike Menino, who discussed achieving financial freedom through multifamily properties. In this clip, we learn about seller financing and how it can positively affect cash flow if you are a seller, and how offering as a buyer can allow you to get properties to add to your portfolio.
I see. So you're going direct to the potential seller saying, we're interested in your property. And if they're interested in, you know, making a deal, you've just, you know, got that kind of worked out with them and you don't have to wait for something to be on the market. That's smart.
And the nice thing is too, you can work out really awesome terms as well. So I've bought a lot of apartments with seller financing. Because a lot of the people we buy from are in different stages. Like I'm in the growth stage and they're in the, you know, they're getting rid of their properties. They're in the retirement stage, right? Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, taxes is such a huge thing. You know, if you've owned a property for 30 years, you probably depreciated it. So what that means is when you go to sell it, let's say for $1 million, that whole thing could be taxable at that $1 million, right? So then we can offer seller financing. We're like, hey, you know, what are you going to do with the money? This is how we present it. Like, what are you going to do with the money? Let's say you get $1 million. What are you going to do with it? Well, I'm just going to put it in my Chase bank account at 0.02%, earn a nickel, a quarter, and just live off that. I'm like, How about this? I have maybe a possible better solution. How would you like, you know, if we give you some down payment and then we give you, you know, an interest rate, 4 or 5%, because we're going to get that from the bank. How about we give you 4 or 5% and it's secured by the property you've owned for 30 years. And here's the great part. You're going to hope and pray that I miss my payment. Because I would ask, what happens if you miss a payment? Oh, you're going to hope and pray. Because I usually put about $200,000 into my properties because I'm increasing the rents. So you're going to hope and pray because I'm going to give you a down payment. I'm going to improve the property, roof, windows, cabinetry, flooring, doors, and trim. And if I miss my payment, then you get it back. You keep my down payment. You've kept the monthly cash flow. And now you have a property that's worth way, way more money because I've put $200,000 into the property. But Mr. Seller, you don't have to worry about that because we pay on the 26th of the month, even though it's due on the 1st. So we pay 45 days in advance.
My next guest, Derek Johnson, shared tips on creating a thriving work environment. In this clip, he discussed identifying strengths in your staff to easily enable delegating tasks.
Right. Well, I know recently I was talking to someone on the show too, and we were really talking about delegation and that same thing, handing it over understanding that you can train someone to do it as well as you, right? We think that, oh no, someone's not going to do it as good as us, and we're going to have to micromanage and all of that too. But that just makes them feel like unable to do everything anyway. And that's not, you don't want your morale of your employees to go down because you hand something off, but then you micromanage the whole thing, right? So we have to learn how to get rid of tasks so that we're not overwhelmed, but at the same time, trust that our staff can actually do everything.
Oh yeah, 100%. And it all starts with how they train them. Some companies have amazing training platforms, CRMs, or just teachers on staff. Others, maybe they don't have the resources yet, or they just suck at teaching. Some people, they're just like, I'm not the one that should be teaching, or she's not the one. That maybe sometimes they just have to sit back and say, who has what skills on my team? You know what? She's amazing at the CRM. She's the best teacher for that. This person's more of a type A and crushes it in sales, but they don't know how to teach and replicate what they do. They're just like, hey, I do this. I'm not a great teacher because I'm going to show you some bad habits, but we'll crush the numbers. So sometimes it's just up to the leader to identify who is best for what, because sometimes it might not be them that's going to be the best teacher, but that's the good thing about having that team. So we probably all had a manager that was on both sides of the spectrum where we're like, all right, he or she is who I would like to emulate, and this person not so much because they're hounding too much, or everything's just all over the place. But definitely being able to identify the strengths and the skills of all the people on their team so they can see which area do they fit best in. Because sometimes there might be an individual who's just in the wrong position and they're like, wait a minute, you're good at this system. There's an easier way. Please show us, because we've been stressed this whole quarter. Like, how can we make this process much smoother?
The third guest in the Look Back episode is Scott Ritzheimer on the topic of the one thing every founder must do. He shares that as entrepreneurs, our roles change over time, but we don't have easily identifiable markers to demonstrate when they occur, which can lead to failures in the founder's journey.
Well, I think what you touch on there too is we go in sometimes as accidental entrepreneurs. I didn't intend to be an entrepreneur either. And so we don't always know everything we need to know. And so there was, unfortunately, a sad part of the story where things just went opposite of what people thought was going to happen. But thankfully, you know, it was able to be turned around over time. But I think that just shows us that we really need to find out what we don't know so we can still be successful, which is why I have this podcast too, because I want to interview people that can share tips and tricks and strategies that people can learn from so they don't have to make those mistakes. So I appreciate you being here to talk about that. But I know today we're going to talk about what you call the founder's evolution. And I would love for you to, first of all, explain, like, what is that and why is it significant?
Yeah. When you see the founder's story happen this many times, this is businesses, nonprofits, just at scale. That's one thing. When you find yourself right in the middle of the same story you've watched unfold thousands of times, that's another thing, right? And having the opportunity, especially early in my career, to see it happen at scale, to see it happen in my own life, I started to realize that all of these different stories really came down to one story. There was this one pattern that every successful entrepreneur followed. Again, businesses, nonprofits didn't matter. And there was, and those that didn't make it, because you start a lot of organizations, you see a lot of them not make it. That's an unfortunate side of the that stage for an organization and for a founder. And the ones that didn't make it, or those that stalled out after having some success, those that bumped up against a wall and just couldn't get through, it was because they didn't understand the pattern. They didn't understand how it changed over time. And so what I did after I had my company, sold it, and having a little bit more time on my hands, I went through and just kind of codified what's going on in this process, right? Like, what if are there stages? Are there clear points where stages change? And I discovered something as I was working with founders, especially around this idea of like, how do we need to show up and how does it change over time? I realized something about the founder's journey that's not true of virtually any other journey. And that is, for founders, their stage change, their role changes, their what causes success changes over time, which is true of every leadership journey. But for founders, there's no clear demarcation point that the game has changed. So you take like an employee's leadership journey, for example, and you start off like I did on the front line. You're a frontline worker. And if you do a good job and show some potential, they promote you to being maybe a line supervisor. And for a lot of folks, that's actually a pretty hard transition to make, right? Moving from being the one doing the stuff to having to lead other people to do stuff, that's a different skill set. But it makes sense because it came with a new title, it came with a promotion, it came, you know, there are external validators that say, hey, the stage has changed for you and you need to change the way you show up to succeed. Well, for a founder, the same progression is happening. But I mean, you know this, you are founder and CEO on your business card from before you start your business, right? You know, it's a, I'm going to start a business. So what's the first thing you do? You find a name, you get the name. The next thing you do is you go get your business cards and they say founder and CEO. But the reality of it is there are five distinct shifts that are going to happen before you ever actually step into a true CEO seat. And because there's nothing to really say that the game has changed, what you see is up to that point, especially founders, they get stuck doing the wrong things in the wrong stages. And this is a very long answer to your question, sorry, but last point I'll make is what I did was I used my experience personally, I used the experience of all these thousands of founders that I got to walk alongside, and I mapped out the seven stages of the journey that every single founder must face.
Next up is Donna Dubay, who taught us six habits to dominate your week. In this clip, she shares that even if we are sole owners of our companies, that we need to think like a CEO to effectively run our organizations.
And a lot of people who listen to us are solopreneurs, and they might be thinking, well, I'm not a CEO, so this maybe isn't for me, right? So can you talk to them about why they truly still are a CEO of their own business and how to accept that as their role?
Yes, yes. And I think that's the first mind shift that has to happen, because the truth is, yes, you don't look the same as the CEO of Microsoft and Nike and these big businesses that we know of, right? They have a board of directors, they have VPs reporting to them on sales and marketing and all that. Yes, we don't have that in a small business. But when you look up the definition of a CEO, that's the person who's leading the business. That's the person who's responsible for where the business is going to go in the next 3 to 5 years. They're crafting the vision and the mission of where we're headed. And so as leader, it is very important that you are acting and thinking like CEO, even if you're working alone, right? Even if you are a solopreneur. Because when you shift your mindset to think, yes, I am the leader, and how I spend my time day to day and week to week needs to reflect that. And so that will make a huge difference in what you do day to day and also the growth of your business day to day. Because when you shift that mindset and you start thinking like a CEO, how you use your time now changes, right? You're much more focused on the activities that are directly tied to revenue and that you can see a return on investment on, right? Of course, there's times when you're going to have to be in the weeds, no doubt, right? Until you can get a team and get that support, there is time there. But intentionally having time on our calendars every week for those CEO high-level tasks is so, so important.
My next guest, Rich Edwards, chatted about the power of harmonizing automation and human touch. This clip touches on why automation has become so much more efficient and why to use it now.
You know, I know a lot of times people are thinking that AI is relatively new, but as you were saying, I mean, it's been a while since it's out there, but probably people are thinking right now more about like ChatGPT and those kind of things. Yeah. But we do know technology has been around, and having different pieces of software that we can connect with and work with, even as individuals or entrepreneurs, not even just in the banking that I know you're helping those types of clients too. Yeah. But there's a lot of things out there, like even the chat bots and all of this that is being used. And I know sometimes as entrepreneurs, like we're trying to engage our customers, we're trying to make things more efficient, we're trying to use this technology as best as possible to make it, you know, easy for us and easy for them too. But I know sometimes we frustrate our customers too, or I know I get frustrated. I hate chatbots because it doesn't answer the question that I'm trying to ask a lot of times.
Yeah.
So I'd love for you to touch on that maybe is, how can those of us who are trying to use technology effectively make it where it's helping our customer, we're understanding what their needs are and not having them feel like they're being ignored or misunderstood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. I mean, great question. There's one question you asked in there at the beginning, which I think is worth addressing quickly. And it's just why now? Like, what is different about what we're experiencing right now than 10 years ago, 20 years ago, even 40 years ago, right? So a lot of the understanding and the mathematics and the science behind a lot of what we're seeing today, particularly in natural language processing, has existed for 40, 50 years. The understanding about what was possible for a machine or a computer to do has existed for a long time. What wasn't there was the raw computing power and then the economically available computing power to really pull it off. So if we want to look back 10 years ago, which was about the time when, you know, I was in Watson, it was really that was really when the gas was starting to get put onto cloud computing. And the, you know, just right down the cost curve of like what you could get available to you, whether you were a startup or a large enterprise and everybody in between. So it was like the availability of the compute power. There was also a combination with the availability of specific types of compute power, particularly you hear the term GPU used a lot, which is a graphical processing unit. And that just allowed for a lot of the training of models. Why it has become suddenly more efficient is they're enabled to run in parallel instead of in series. So instead of sequence like step one, step two, step three, step four, you run all the steps at once. Mm-hmm. And it's not just 10 steps, it's a million steps, it's 10 million steps, it's a trillion steps. And being able to do that at very, very large scales, it's not 10 times as efficient or 100 times as efficient, it's really like a million times as efficient and quickly. And all of the metrics that you want to look at as far as the availability of that and the efficiency of it, strictly from a physics and mathematics standpoint, right? So we've kind of hit this tipping point. Cloud computing plus GPU silicon technology plus some of the recent innovations in software. And one of the things you point out is ChatGPT. The T stands for transformer. And that is really an innovation that only came out in 2017. The idea of like what a transformer is and how it allows at the software level, at the model level, to take advantage of this like parallel computing. So that's, I don't want to go too deep in it. And if anybody really wants to look for more resources, definitely reach out to me and we can kind of talk a little bit more. But that's kind of like why now. There's a combination of a couple of things that have really just made it possible, made it available.
In this clip from Ensuring a Positive Employee Experience for Hybrid Teams, David Hartley shares his thoughts on how businesses can adapt their firms to the evolving landscape by becoming educated on trends, including how AI will impact their companies. How can those who are listening to this transform their firms to adapt to the rapidly evolving business landscape? And what key strategies or approaches should they consider in this transformation?
Got it. Yeah, and there's a lot in that question. But when I think about, you know, things are changing. And so, you know, there's a lot of debate now with AI and its impact on both businesses and the CPA profession, kind of what that's going to look like in the future. And I think, you know, kind of the core answer is that the future is going to look very different than the past. And I think if you're not, you know, kind of one recommendation would be, you've got to get educated on these things. You've got to understand what's coming. And as a result of that, whether I know a lot of people, like there's been a lot about ChatGPT and a lot of things that people have heard, but a lot of people have not invested the time. When you look at the statistics of how many people actually use ChatGPT, you have a whole bunch of people who use it a whole lot, but then you've got a massive amount of people who've heard about it, but have never actually used it. And I think that's the kind of thing that if I'm a small business owner, you have to experiment and educate yourself to learn what's coming. And I do think technology is going to be a massive change. As you mentioned in the intro, I've been in the profession now for over 3 decades. When I look at the next 10 years, there's probably going to be more change in that 10 years than I've experienced in the last 30 years. So for that, I think that, you know, business is becoming more complex. You need to have good advisors. You need to be educating yourself. You need to be trying new things. And those are all kind of the cornerstone of, I think, small businesses, the ones that are going to thrive versus the ones that are going to struggle. If you keep doing the things the same way you've always done them, somebody's going to figure out a better way to do them that's going to be a lot more efficient and a lot more effective. And if you're not part of that group, then suddenly you're going to be at a huge disadvantage.
My final clip from Transform Blog Posts into a Lead Magnet Goldmine with Michelle DeFilippo, we hear her describe exactly what a lead magnet is and how it can affect the first impression of your business.
In case someone doesn't really know what the concept means, maybe they're new in their business and they haven't heard the term, what is a lead magnet?
Okay, well, some people are not, like you said, familiar with the term lead magnet, but I think we've all experienced them. You go to someone's website and they offer a free document of some kind, a white paper, tips and tricks, whatever it is. Sometimes these are distributed through social media now, but it's anything that you offer to your prospective customer before they make contact with you. And lead magnets are great because they allow people to learn more about you and decide for themselves in a non-pressured environment whether or not you might be a good fit for whatever it is they're looking for. So it applies to all businesses, and it doesn't have to be anything complicated, but it should, because I have a design background, my advice is always to make it look as good as you possibly can, because it is the first impression that you are giving to your prospective customer. It's not something you should throw together yourself and just put out there.
I hope you enjoyed this look back episode and you were reminded of some great tips to help you in your business. If you want to hear the full episodes, links are in the show notes. And remember that each regular episode has additional content you can access from our resources page. Be sure to check that out as well. Who do you know who could benefit from this information or other episodes on my show? Would you please let them know about BizHelp for You to help me meet my goal of educating entrepreneurs to help them be successful? Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you for tuning in today. Would you please share this episode with those you know and leave a review on your favorite platform? And if you find our show informative, would you consider being a financial sponsor to help me continue my mission to educate business owners? A link is located in the episode description, and no amount is too small. I'd really appreciate your support. If you are interested in connecting with our guest and receiving the offer they had to share, a link to our resource page is in the show notes. Finally, if you have any bookkeeping or payroll needs, reach out to us at 310-534-5577 or contact at abandp.com. My team and I are eager to assist you. Until next time, have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Biz Help for You. Please join your host, Candy Messer, again next time. Have a terrific day.